I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening. Please give a warm welcome to Andrew from San Diego.
Yes, sir. My name is Andrew Shoulders, and I'm a real alcoholic. My sobriety date is Memorial Day 92, and for that day I am extremely grateful. My home group is the old timers group, and at this particular group you got to have 10 years to share. There is no clapping. Crosstalk is definitely allowed. They read from the original manuscript. It's a very beautiful meeting. Met a lot of powerful people there who definitely influenced my sobriety. Some of the people are here today, and I want to thank them for being here. Bob, Craig, Gary, oh, come on, don't do that. Rick. Roger! Have a lot of mentors here. And I appreciate each and every one of you for being here. Mama Carolyn, thank you so much for being here. It was necessary for me to ask you to come here because a lot of you probably don't know, but I used to, back in 1979, I used to have a crush on her youngest daughter. And Carolyn lived going towards Spring Valley where the houses were, nice big houses, and I came from Meadowbrook Apartments. So I had to walk quite a ways to see her daughter. So one day I called, and she said, I don't think you want to come over here now. I want to come over there, and I want to see you. She's at my mama's home, and I don't think you want to. I want to come over there and see you. So I walked down the hill, knocked on the screen, and I saw a dog barking. And I walked up to the screen, and like I'm running something, and the dog ran after me. Chased me out of the yard, and here comes Carolyn. I saw her for the first time. She called the dog back in after the dog ran me out of the gate and just looked at me, just stared at me with a cold stare. And I said, is Greta home? So her daughter didn't come out. She just came to the screen and just smiled and said, I told you. But it was absolutely necessary that you be here, and I thank you so much. You are my mom in sobriety. Your children, especially your son Danny, was like a brother to me, so it is fitting that you're here. And also, in order to keep it, pardon me for my urban vernacular, for me to keep it real up here, I invited my cousin. He is my first cousin. We actually used to drink together. We come from a long line of drinkers. I don't pronounce them alcoholic. Our book tells us not to do that. But they definitely did drink, and we were raised in that environment, and we continued on the tradition. And my cousin has firsthand experience on what I was really like. And I remember saying clearly, I really wasn't that bad. And I got to ask my cousin, was I really that bad?
Terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't a pretty sight. Trust me. So I'm glad that you're here. We come a long way. You know, people like my cousin and I, we don't typically make it to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we go to prison. We end up shot, killed. You know, like a lot of people, where we come from, that was their lot in life. It jumped off like that where we come from. And that's how we got down. Anyway, it's a blessing. The fact that I'm standing up here is a blessing. And I want to thank Randy for allowing me the privilege to speak. Randy and Felix are not here, but I know that they're here in spirit. And I thank you, George, for being here. I'm at home, friends. I'm totally cool, I'm totally relaxed, and I am not afraid of anything. I was born May 2nd, 1992. Y'all know I'm lying. 1967. Come on, give me a little credit. You know, being sober made me look a little younger now. Give me some props now. Yeah, 17 years old. My father was a musician, and my mother was a cappella singer. They met and married in San Bernardino, California. The Berdu, exactly. My mother was labeled the prettiest girl in Muskoy. Muskoy was by the projects in San Bernardino. She was labeled the prettiest girl in Muskoy. And my father was a musician, and I'm a tell you, he was quite the musician. He played, do you guys remember the TV series The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? Well, he was in that band. So when they got married, it was in the newspapers, and Mr. and Mrs. Andrew Shoulders wed on this day. It was quite an occasion. I had that newspaper clipping and blew it up into a poster, and very beautiful occasion. My cousin's mom was the ring person, the ring girl, or something like that, the newspaper said. And what the newspaper didn't say, that it was a lot of drama and chaos going on. You know, my mother, she had her first child when she was 12 years old. You know, that's a beautiful thing. I love my sister. And had another one, about 14 to 15. And back in those days, it was taboo to have babies by different men out of wedlock. It just wasn't cool to do. That wasn't a thing to do. So my father professed his undying love to this young beauty, Muskoy. And the feeling wasn't mutual. But my grandmother overheard them talking. And she said, "Look, you got these two kids, you know, and this man loves you. He's working. Marry him." So my mother married him. And my mother said, "Okay, I'll marry you under the condition I don't have any children. I already have two. I'm only 18. I ain't ready for no more babies." My father said to her, "Don't worry about it. I can't have babies." So when they consummated their deal, here comes young Andrew. So it happened. I was conceived, and my mother freaked. She said, "You told me that you couldn't have babies." My dad said, "You believed me?" My mother told me the whole story when I got sober. She was woman enough to tell me. And I always appreciate my mother for keeping it real, telling me I needed to know what was going on, because from far back as I can remember, I was always an isolated, lonely kid. Didn't know what was really going on. Didn't have too many hugs. Wasn't a lot of love going on. I don't know why, it just wasn't. So I found solace in drawing. You remember I used to draw? I used to draw comic book characters. Superman. Batman. Shazam. I was real good at it. Trust me, I got real good at it. It was quite impressive. And as I said earlier, you know, drinking was very much a part of our family. The Motown sound was in full swing. Music was always playing. You know, we carried on the tradition where they just hung together. Families hung together. It was real tight. They loved each other. They ate together, drank together, and they also fought together. So, yeah. And they used to call my mother Annie Oakley. Y'all know who Annie Oakley is? She was quite fond of the pistola. And she would shoot. And she, from what I understand, she was a pretty good shot. She shot my dad. She kept it real and told me. I don't remember any of this, but I'm saying all this to say there was a lot of chaos and a lot of stuff going on in my early childhood that developed the isolation. I just didn't fit. I felt very uncomfortable, and I found comfort in being alone and in drawing. I remember clearly, and I think I used to make my little cousins do it, put a little towel around my neck and jump off of a roof trying to be Shazam. I always wanted to be something else, something to just change me from what I was. I was dreaming about that before I took my first drink. You know, my mother, she used to throw these parties, and there was always alcohol around. There was a lot of booze, and my mother, she was like into liqueur, so they were different colors. So the green bottle meant the Green Lantern to me. The red bottle, depending on which day, was Shazam or Superman. And the blue one, and I used to make them fight. This is how I used to, yeah, that was entertainment. That was entertainment, man. And then when they would come over, let's put towels around the neck and jump off a roof. We used to do stuff like that. And I got to say, friends, I grew up in a neighborhood where being Shazam and being Superman, it just wasn't cool. The boys in the hood wasn't trying to see all that. And to add insult to injury, friends, I was into, don't laugh at me, man. I was into Sean Cassidy and the Partridge Family. Met her on a Monday and my heart still still. To do run, 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 to do run, run. Somebody told me that her name. That's was cool for me. There was a group called Kiss talking about, I was made for loving you, baby. Wearing makeup. The boys in the hood didn't appreciate that. And I got ridiculed. I got beat up a lot, which further enforced the isolation. Yeah, I used to get beat down for that too, man. It wasn't no joke. Meadowbrook Apartments was no joke. It ain't no joke now, but so one night, my mother called me in the room, her room, and she said, "Can you think of anything bad that would happen to your father?" And I said, "No." "You can't think of anything at all?" I said, "No." She said, "Your dad's dead." And I said, "Why?" "He was killed tonight." My father was a working musician. Never taught me how to play music. I barely even remember him. I was robbed of the opportunity to know of my father. See, they divorced when I was 3. And I was hurt. I was devastated. But the real stickler was, after my mother told me, my sister, the one above me, started laughing. See, we all have different fathers. She was laughing. And I tried my best to fight her, but she was always a rough rider. She took to the street a little bit tougher than I did, and she knew how to throw down. My sister can box. She's a cop, too. She's a police officer right now, so you know. She got skills. So, I tried my best to fight, but what hurt the most is my mother didn't do anything to stop her. From that day on, friends, I took it to the street. I wasn't listening to Sean Cassidy no more. Wasn't watching the Partridge Family. Wasn't trying to press. Back then, you had perms and all that, and I wasn't trying to do my hair like that no more. I started doing what young brothers in the street were doing. What were they doing? They were stealing. I learned what they did. I took on their characteristics. I took on their traits. And I was accepted. I became a part of a brotherhood. And it felt good. Not too long after that, I got my first ears pierced. I think I was 12 or 13 years old. And it was cool with my mom. She knew what was going on. I think that as long as he ain't in the room singing those songs, he's fine. I took it to the streets, friends. And the cats I were hanging with, we'd go to certain neighborhoods and steal bikes. Then I don't know if you guys remember a store called U Totem. We used to go to U Totem and steal candy from U Totem. And brag about our victory. But then the true rites of passage, which I thank God I never got into, them cats started stealing purses. It was a store called Palo, right around Meadowbrook Apartments. I would be with them. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Them cats, I used to watch them dress up in black. Little caps and... I wasn't quite ready for that. But I watched them do it. And watched them come back with their little successes. The next thing you know, them cats started getting locked up. It was some real stuff, but I felt a part of. And at the age of 14, I really felt a part of, because that's when I discovered booze on my own. I was no longer playing with my mama's liqueurs. Boys in the Hood indoctrinated me into that sort of life. And it worked. See, the booze was my cape, friends. I became a superhero. And I got to tell you, almost overnight, I started dressing differently. You guys like the way I'm dressed tonight? Hey, same thing happened then. I started dressing, smelling good. Back then, they had what they called the Jerry Curl. The Jerry Curl came out.
Yes, sir.
Woo! For real. Curls for the girls. That's what we said, curls for the girls. And it grew real long, too. And it's just shaking it. I, as Bill said in his story, had arrived. I was finally accepted. I remember clearly. The guy who introduced me to the drink told me, man, you just cool. You wasn't cool last year, man. You just cool. You always in pocket. In other words, I had money. You just fun to be around. I found the magic. I wasn't drawn anymore. I wasn't isolated anymore. I was a part of a crew that worked. I didn't know I had a reading deficiency. I didn't know that I had arithmetic problems. And it really didn't matter. I really didn't care. Because I was part of a... It was a beautiful thing. The music. We had our music. Hip-hop had just come out. The Sugar Hill Gang. And man.
Yes, sir.
Ooh.
House party.
House party. I'm glad you said that. The last time I saw Sister Carolyn's daughter... It was at a house party. I threw a house party. And she showed up. It was before she was about to move away. She showed up. And they left early because it was chaperoned by my mother. And we just couldn't get it on. So the party got turned out real quick. But that's the last time I saw Creta. That's the last time I saw her. She came to my party. And that's the way it was, friends. It wasn't about education. Homework, you know, like normal stuff. I wasn't watching the Partridge Family no more. I was in the streets. But I had a little problem in the streets, man. The cats were like playing dice. And my brain wasn't quick enough when the dice would stop. It wasn't quick enough to count. You know, they would play cards and I couldn't count. If I can't count, if I can't play basketball, if I can't play football like these guys, I'll perfect another skill. So I started to talk to the girls real smooth. I started to, play music like my father. And there was a cat named Prince who made that possible.
Yes,
you know, all I had to do was just strum on the guitar like Prince was doing, and I got a lot of attention that way. And I started a band. My father never taught me the music, but I inherited it. And I started playing music. I couldn't play basketball, couldn't shoot dice, but I can play music. And I can carry a tune. So it really made me popular. It really made me popular. In fact, I remember very clearly, now I don't know any major or minor chords, but we had a gig at Patrick Henry during a pep rally or something. And we had very defective equipment. And so we started off the show. The mics didn't work. The amplifiers wasn't working. And the kids started laughing. They started laughing at us, and rightfully so. We had bunk equipment. So what did I do? I grabbed a guitar, and I banged it across the stage, and we got an ovation. So I found the crazier I act, the more I can get a rise out of people. Couple that with drinking.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I never wanted to relinquish that life. That life worked for me. Funny things started happening with the Jerry Curl thing. If you don't take care of it, it can start playing out in new growth and it'll break off. Well, because I was quite fond of the sauce, that was going on. And my hair would break out. You know, I would wear clothes that I wore 2 days ago. And I started having hygiene problems. And people would tell me, hey, man, you need to slow your roll. There was no way I was going to give up the magic elixir. See, I couldn't see what the alcohol was doing to me. I just knew what it did for me. And I was going to pursue it until the wheels fall off. Now, stop drinking for what? To go back in a room and draw? Who am I going to draw? Who? Gilligan? What am I going to do? No. If this is going to be my lot in life, then so be it. I had no intentions on changing. I somehow skated through high school. I have no idea. I was in special ed classes, my friend, so it made it easy for me to BS my way through school. Didn't know how to read or write. But I knew how to drink. And I loved to be around my family. Loved to be around my family. I remember one day I'm with this cat. We're over this lady's house. We're on Home Avenue. You know where I'm going with this? And my cousin say I used to make him fight. I told my cousin, hit me. I'm an alcoholic and I like drama.
Irk and jerk.
They used to call me that. They used to call me 40 ounce. And King Ill, because I had a tendency to act a little crazy. So I'm looking at my cousin, all of a sudden, hit me, man. So we were wrestling and hit me. And I saw that he was getting tired. And I got really angry at him. And I got real violent with him. And I'm going to show him. I'm going to show you how to do this. The lady had a tape recorder on the ground. I kicked the tape recorder and it went through the wall. And she crying, oh my God, look what you're doing to my house. Ah, da, 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 da. She left and called the police. Police came, surrounded the house. And I told him, just don't open the door. If they don't have a warrant, they can't come in here. Don't worry about it. What did he do? He opened the door, sawed off shotguns. So we got on the ground. Head behind the head. My cousin was talking crazy to the police. And I'm like, we about to get killed. But I'm like, yeah, but finally, he got it. Got to have heart. Yeah. Friends, I'm not saying this to brag. I'm letting you know how we lived. I have a little brother right now who's in a penitentiary because of that lifestyle. We have an uncle that's in the pit, and he was a police officer. So we have a history of some wild stuff going on in our family, and we picked up the torch and ran with it. And one day, friends, the gig was up. I didn't know what to do. I used to tell my brother, I don't want to do this anymore, but I don't know how to stop. I want to die. My mother used to find me. I mean, bless her heart, man. We used to go on what they call missions. Remember, we were going excursions, our little drinking. If the party wasn't going on in Southeast San Diego, we'd take it to Chula Vista. We call Chula Vista the Ville. We turn out the party there and take it to IB. Then we take it to, sweet Spring Valley. To go back to Southeast San Diego. That's how we lived. And a lot of chaos and drama followed us. I remember being with my little brother. Behind drama, thuggery. So I got tired of it. I wanted out. Didn't know how to get out. And I just wanted to die. I didn't want to be here anymore. If this is what it is, then I don't even want to be here. Mental illness does run in our family to a degree, so I felt my thoughts were very crazy. So I did what you did, Crystal. I called CMH. I called County Mental Health, and I told the lady what was going on with me. And she said, that angel of a woman said to me, I don't think you're crazy at all. I think you have a drinking problem. I'm going to give you a number to call. Maybe they can help you. That was in May of 92. I went into a treatment center, Southeast San Diego. It was a beautiful thing. I saw brothers and sisters, African American people, who spoke articulately, who listened to each other, who can sit in a chair and just listen. And they would use words like adherence. Perfect adherence to these principles. What the hell? They made this deal attractive. As a matter of fact, the program coordinator, he said when he saw me coming in, he told the other people, he said, I got him. I got him. His name was Tim Huddleston. He is now in that, he was a Christian, a real strong Christian. So he's in that big cathedral in the sky. But he took me under his wing. Very educated man. From the things he was telling me, I would write them down as best I could and look it up in the dictionary so I could learn how to talk the way he talked. They got me involved in the literacy program. I give a shout out to Reed San Diego. Had an eighth grade education, and I stopped when I was at the college level to the degree where I did go to college. It was a four-month rehab. I stayed for a year and a half. Want to know why I stayed for a year and a half? I was there 18 days, and I'm with him again. I was there for 18 days, and I hooked up with some girls and some Navy girls. And I thought I was cured. I'm in rehab, 18 days sober. So I bought the liquor. And they weren't drinking my liquor fast enough. And I got mad. So there again, I'm going to show you how to drink. I'm going to show you. One more time. And I drank the liquor. Went back to the store, get some more liquor, and drank it. Went back to the store. My money's gone. One thing about drinking, it makes you go use the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom. And there he was again. I saw that look, the yellow eyes, the falling out here. I saw it, and I couldn't look at myself. Ran out of money, so I went to our aunt's house to borrow some money. And she said to me, I thought you were in rehab. She looked at me and said, I knew that wasn't going to work. See, they foretold my future. My father died at 33. They knew I was going to die before then. They knew it. She looked at me and said, I knew it wasn't going to last. Folks, that night I came to at the trolley station, 12th and Imperial. That was my last drunk. So I went back to that rehab and did everything they told me to do. It was only a four-month program, but I stayed for a year and a half and became their valedictorian. It was a program designed for heroin addicts. They weren't going to let me in. I guess they let me in. It wasn't designed for alcoholics. knowing that they tricked me into my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I wasn't going to go. And when I came in and heard how it works and heard that word, adherence to these principles, I found it. So I stuck around and became secretary of that meeting they tricked me into going into for a year and a half. You know, I got hip to the Southeast Solano Club, and thank God for the Southeast Solano Club. They introduced me to the social aspect of being sober. They had coronation balls where you had to dress up in tuxedos. They had what they called an evening in Africa. They had dances. They had boat dances on Lord Hornblower. Friends, I had to learn how to be sociable. I came from the hood. I learned how to socialize. Good morning. How are you today? What the fuck do you mean how I'm doing? Baby Boo. We used to call him Baby Boo. What the fuck do you mean? They just said, how you doing? What? Don't say how you doing. How you doing? I'm going to go up in your wall and check. That's how I'm doing. Normal conversation was foreign to me. I had to learn how to say, I'm doing fine. How are you? I know you guys laugh. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it was a way of life for me. People like me wind up in the penitentiary. They showed me how to live, showed me how to dress. Got tired of the played out curls, so I started cutting my hair, growing a goatee. Met a young lady and got married. You know, it was the women in the program that really helped me. Thank God for sponsorship, the 12 steps. They took me through the steps. It's a beautiful occasion. But my first, I was at a job, got sober, and it was the first Christmas party. I wasn't escorted by no man in the program. It was a woman. It was a lady who took me. Told me how to dress. When we ate at the table, you put the tablecloth on your lap. The napkin? No, it was a tablecloth, dude. It was something, but you put it on your lap. And it was nice, too. And she showed me how to eat with the fork. The women in the program. So when I met this young lady, it was the women who schooled me. The women, they loved me. They adopted me as their own. It's like it is fitting that I call Carolyn my mama, because that's exactly what I found here, a family. You know, things didn't work out with the marriage. It was she was a beautiful woman. I just didn't know how to be a husband. Straight up. Didn't know how to be a husband. You know, I'm going to say something that I never thought I would say publicly, but I'm a real alcoholic, the real kind, the kind that get into a lot of accidents, automobile, a lot of fights. And when I met the woman, we got married, tried to have a baby, found out we couldn't. Couldn't blame her. She already had a child from her first marriage. So I had to get myself checked out, and that old wound was resurfaced. And they said, we may be able to correct this if you have surgery. And they told me how much it cost. So I said to my then wife, shall we go for it? So we agreed not to. She had a daughter, and her daughter became my daughter. 5 years into the marriage, we decided to end the marriage. I snapped. At 8 years sober, I snapped. All I ever wanted was to walk in my baby back home. All I wanted was a girlfriend I can kick it with and be normal, like Leave It to Beaver. That's what I wanted. Pray to God for it. I can't have kids, God. My wife is gone. You let me down. And friends, what better way to hurt a father? What better way to hurt a father? By messing with his daughter. So I told God, okay, you created me. I'm going to go out here and do what I need to do in sobriety, friends. I traveled a dark path. I had 8 years sober. But I renounced God. Moved into a recovery home while I did it. And it was the fellowship that sustained me. I really don't know how I stayed sober as long as I have, because I was not a picnic. I hurt a lot of women out there to pay him back. And I did it quite well. Quite well. Mama Carolyn used to talk to me about my issues with God at length. And I heard nothing. Remember those days? This woman used to pray for me. Because I'm in sobriety, speaking to people with issues with God and making them pay. I came in contact with a gentleman named Lee. He's now in that big meeting in the sky. That man worked hard with cancer, trying to help me with my issues with God. He used to tell me, you're never going to get even. God's a better hitman than you. Make peace. You owe her an amends, I ain't doing that. To the degree that before he died, he said, you may need to consider resetting your sobriety date. I haven't drank, friends, but I was on a reckless path. To the degree, I started flirting with the occult a little bit. Learning how to cast some spells. I got really into it. Started playing heavy metal. Some real. Trust me on this. It was a very dark path. It was very dark. And it was a double life. It was a secret life that you guys just didn't know about. And the only reason why I'm exposing this to you now is because I am healed of that. See, on January 20th, I got a call that Lee died. And we weren't on good terms. He started an old-timers meeting at South Bay Pioneers in my honor that I never attended. That man went to his grave wondering what's going to happen to me. And when he died, something happened. Friends, he's gone and I'm smelling cigarette smoke. And it's like, Lee, leave me alone. I ain't going to get another sponsor. No. I'll just listen to a speaker tape. It got so uncomfortable, friends, that I went to the only place I knew where there were people, and it was Old Town Speakers. Went to Old Town Speakers and saw a guy named Bruce take 31 years. And I knew that Bruce was doing this big buck Joe and Charlie thing. And I went up to him after the meeting. I said, hey, man, can I join your gang? And he said, sure. We've been on a journey ever since. That fourth step is real. In sobriety, 17 years sober, I saw Andrew, and it was ugly. And I said, okay, God, if you do this for me one more time, I'll do my best to clean up my part. I can't continue. Lee's right. Something's got to give. Looking on the internet and I got Satan horns and guitars and it was some pretty dark stuff, man. But that's where I wanted to go. So I made my peace with God. Next thing you know, I got my cousin wanting to give me 17-year tokens. People want me to speak at meetings. People genuinely want me around again. Friends, that's a miracle. Miracles happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I exposed all that to you. Sobriety ain't always a bowl of cherries. We have to swallow some hard truths. Our 12 and 12 talks about that girl we wanted to marry who had other notions. The children that we wanted to have, they were presented sickly, but we had none at all. Those are some hard things to live with. I can't be a normal guy. Have a family. The only thing that gives me hope, there's a guy named Jerry Stump who coached me through my divorce. He told me, and I believe him to this day, he said, Andrew, I promise you, you will remarry. Andrew, I promise you, You will have children if you just pass the test. This is a test. And I like to think, friends, I passed that test because I haven't found it necessary to take a drink, blow anyone's brains out, blow my brains out, or wreak havoc, or be called Irken Jerk. I did some crazy stuff, but I haven't found it necessary to return to that. That's the gift of God. That's the miracle. That in spite of me, there is still sobriety. That in spite of me, you guys still dealt with me. We have relatives who wrote me off, but you guys never did. There's healings here, friends. People's lives change. It took the death of a hell's angel to wake me up. When I made my peace with God, I no longer smelled the smoke. I think Lee just sort of said, "You got him, God." That man fought hard with cancer to help me cross the threshold, to get a little peace and comfort and sobriety. I'm still employed, still a homeowner. Life is really good. My cousin and I were talking about a beautiful lady. I met her at a coffee shop. She's from Ethiopia, a very beautiful lady. Gave me a Bible. A Bible. Oh! Well, I told her about this evening. She took me outside and do exactly what me and Al did. We prayed. She prayed for the success that I come up here and carry the message effectively. And I really hope that I conveyed some form of message. Friends, this road has not been easy, but it's been very, very beneficial. And I'll end with this. In the other big book, it talks about 10 lepers that were healed by the master. And he said, "By thy faith you are now healed." And they went on their way. I suppose that happens here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get well. We go about our way. We go to work. We find her. We find it. But according to that book, only one turned around and said, "Thank you." And he said, "Because of your faith, you are now whole." Friends, I'm on the way of wholeness. That's not because of Andrew all of a sudden is a great guy, or I didn't drink for 17 years. That's because I can tell you straight up that God can and will, and He has. And make no mistake about it, when I talk of God, I'm talking about the God of the preachers. I'm talking about the biblical God, because that's exactly where I had to go to get comforted. Al wanted me to speak here a year ago. I was not in a fit condition to speak, but God saw fit for me to be here. So my friends, I intend to stay sober, and I hope you guys do too. Thank you so much for allowing me to share.